Welcome to God and Country Biblical Exposition. This week is a refutation of the No King protest that took place last weekend. And that mandate to refute is a command in Titus chapter 1, Titus 1:9, holding fast the faithful word, which is in accordance with the teaching, so that he, the minister of the gospel, will be able both to exhort in sound doctrine and refute those who contradict. For there are many rebellious men, empty talkers, and deceivers. And there certainly are many. You know, it's a mistake to understand that text in only a religious context, because everything is actually religious. The teachings of Karl Marx, Freud, Nietzsche, Mohammed must also be refuted. Now, in regard to the No Kings protest, most Christians already discern the error. I'll simply be confirming for you what you already suspect, but still it must be laid out. Now, it's obviously an anti-Christ Marxist movement. The event is sponsored and promoted by radical left NGO nonprofit organizations such as Indivisible and Rise and Resist, which have received $7.6 million from George Soros and his Open Society Foundation. And Soros is well known as a funder of anti-American Marxist ideological movements. In fact, right on the No Kings website, you can see all of their partners and supporters like the American Atheists and the ACLU and the American Humanist Association. And Show Pride and Pride at Work, LGBT groups, also the Socialist Democrat Party, the Freedom Socialist Party, People for the American Way, ACT UP, and there are dozens of global warming groups. There are also dozens of Open Borders anti-ICE groups, also Planned Parenthood, and the Communist Party USA. This should tell you all you need to know about the rightness or wrongness of these protests. And there are also many religious groups sponsoring this event, like the leftist evangelical group Sojourners. On their website, they promote the event with a picture of a pride and transgender flag. One thing all of these sponsoring religious groups have in common is that they all deny key doctrines of the Christian faith. That should be a telltale sign, along with promoting immoral living. They're actually the Nicolaitans mentioned in Revelation chapter 2, verse 6. The Nicolaitans taught an anti-law, immoral Christianity, which the text says that Christ himself hates the deeds of the Nicolaitans. Now, this protest attracted people and groups who all have one thing in common: lawlessness, a belief in moral autonomy from God, human autonomy. And this is what Jesus spoke about in his last day prophecy in Matthew chapter 24, verse 12, lawlessness will increase. The Apostle Paul also mentioned this in his last day prophecies, 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 3, the man of lawlessness will come. Verse 7, there's the mystery of lawlessness. Verse 8, then that lawless one will be revealed, whom the Lord will slay with the breath of his mouth and bring to an end by the appearance of his coming. And we also must remember what Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount, where at the judgment, Jesus will say to those who made a false profession of faith, I will declare to them, I never knew you. Depart from me, ye who work lawlessness. And also in Matthew chapter 13, the Son of Man will send forth his angels, and they will gather out of his kingdom all stumbling blocks and those who commit lawlessness. So no true Christian has anything to do with the No King protest. No conservative evangelical biblical groups were actually in attendance. Because remember, 2 Corinthians chapter 6, do not be bound together with unbelievers, for what partnership has righteousness with lawlessness? Or what fellowship has light with darkness? So if you had any questions about the No King protest, and may have actually been deceived into thinking it's some sort of pro-American democracy, anti-tyranny rally, just look at who you're in bed with. The Communist Party, abortionists, the immoral. And their worldviews are driving the protest. The tyranny they want to overthrow is the rule of God and biblical law and morality, both social and economic. The No King protest is just one part of the last day prophecy in Psalm chapter 2. The kings of the earth taking their stand and the rulers taking counsel against the Lord and against his Messiah, saying, let us tear their fetters apart and cast away their cords from us. They don't want God's law. They don't want God's moral restraint. And they're fighting God, and they're going to lose. Because Psalm chapter 2 goes on and says that he who sits in the heavens will laugh at them. He will speak to them in his anger. He will terrify them in his fury because God has installed his king on Mount Zion. God has decreed a king over them, even though they don't want a king. And one more verse regarding the protests and the rage of those who are antichrist. Isaiah chapter 8, verse 20. To the law and to the testimony, if they do not speak according to this word, it's because they have no light. These are people who live in moral and spiritual darkness. And verse 21, they will pass through the land hard-pressed and famished, and it will turn out when they're hungry, when they're in need, they will be enraged and curse their king and their God as they face upward. And they will look to the earth and behold distress and darkness and the gloom of anguish, and they will be driven away into darkness. They lose in the end. But notice in their anger, they are enraged and they curse their king and their God. They despise with a passion the authority of God and the Romans chapter 13 role of the magistrate to be God's avenger against those who practice evil. Now, what was happening pragmatically in these protests was that the radical left wanted to create civil unrest for the purpose of obstruction. And to give Democrat voters, you know, those who lost the election, a platform to again vote against Trump. They lost, you know, the election, but 49% of the people still voted against Trump. And the only thing they can do now is be a belligerent minority. And this is what happened in Israel 2 years ago, right in the spring before Hamas attacked on October 7th. Netanyahu and the conservatives won the election. And they wanted to rein in the power of the Israeli courts. For it was the courts in Israel that legalized homosexuality, gay marriage, abortion, and socialism, just like here in America. But when the conservative government, the government that won the election, came up with legislation to change the power of the courts, which they had every right to do, the left in Israel, the minority, activated protests. Closed down businesses, blocked streets, refused to work, and they created more resistance in Israel than would ever be possible in America. Since the left in Israel lost the election, their only recourse was to be an uncompliant, resist-at-all-cost minority. And it worked. Netanyahu's administration had to back down just to preserve the peace. The squeaky wheel gets the oil. So the left in America is trying to use the same playbook here. But fortunately, there is still enough Christian base in America so that the left cannot rally the opposition that they wish they could have. And we also have a president and administration that will not fall for the alligator tears of the left. This is the second No Kings protest. The first was back in July. And even though the media reports large attendance, protests over 2,500 locations in America, it was a failure. There was no mass uprising, just a handful of politically active Democrats coming out in the street and voicing their opposition to Trump, as if we didn't already know their position. In Boston, only 2,000 to 3,000 demonstrators showed up, all Democrats. And even NBC News noted that it was an older crowd, Democrat boomers, very few young people. It's what they call a Q-tip rally. because of all the gray hairs. In New York City, the police said 100,000 protesters showed up. But given the fact that New York City is a Democrat enclave, you'd think there'd be more. 3.5 million show up every year at the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. 2 million show up every year at the New York City Gay Pride Parade. 100,000 showing up for a No King protest is just like a crowded day in Central Park. In other smaller cities, the protests were merely a handful of 200 to 300 people standing on street corners. One good thing about this protest is that it's going to come back to haunt the Democrats, just like their opposition to January 6th. After all of their criticism of January 6th, Democrats can no longer legitimately attack government buildings without being hypocrites. And after these No King protests, they'll not be able to legitimately abuse executive power if they ever regain the White House, at least without being held accountable to their previous positions. Just like they're on record saying that it's un-American to shut down the government and not pass an extension bill. But now I want to switch gears and refute the ideology behind the No King protest. It's actually masterful propaganda, trying to link current day leftism to the founders of America and the American Revolution. You know, just like they try to link conservatism to the Nazis and fascists, when in fact, Nazism in German means the National Socialist Party. The Nazis were the Democrats in Germany. But this is the nature of evil and false teachers: to manipulate the labels, to disguise themselves as angels of light, 2 Corinthians 11. But in this case, the No King argument is really a tough sell for the American people. Most of the public isn't buying it. It's obviously an absurd claim. Most of the public understands that President Trump is not a king or a dictator. Everything he has done is according to the Constitution, the constitutional authority given to the president. Even the Supreme Court has agreed with him multiple times over the obstruction of leftist judges. Never in the history of the world has a despotic king ever lower taxes and cut the size of government. Well, here's the American history on this. None of the American founders actually made an explicit No King argument. That sloganeering would not have been accepted by the colonists. The colonists were too biblically literate, and everyone knew the condemnation of Judges 21:25. In those days, there was no king in Israel, and everyone did what was right in his own eyes. No king is anarchy. It's a violation of God's institution of government. The colonists in the revolution weren't promoting some sort of lawless anarchy, but that God and his laws were above the king. As John Adams said, we're to be a nation of laws, not men. And this No King's protest is not protesting for America to be under God's law. In fact, they don't want Jesus Christ to be the king. They want no king. But Isaiah chapter 33, verse 22, for the Lord is our judge, the Lord is our lawgiver, the Lord is our king, he will save us. So we're to have a king. But in this, we have to discuss Thomas Paine and his pamphlet, Common Sense. For in that promo piece for the American Revolution, Paine alluded to this concept of a democracy over a king. But Thomas Paine was a non-Christian agnostic deist. And after being a rabble-rouser for the American Revolution, he went over to France to help out the French Revolution and the Reign of Terror. The American Revolution was based on law coming from God. The French Revolution was based on law coming from man and the rights of men. And the fruit of the French Revolution was ungodly tyranny. Every atheist, humanist, and immoral man rallied behind the French Revolution. But back here in America, our revolution was more biblical. But nevertheless, there was still a conflict between Christian thought and some humanistic thought. Thomas Paine, and No King as he defined it, was secular. And he was a scourge on the American Revolution. There is this famous tapestry called The Hanging of Absalom that goes back to the American Revolution. And Absalom, the son of David that tried to overthrow his father, is depicted as the colonists, the victims, the good guys trying to overthrow tyranny. And David is depicted as the evil king, King George. And this piece of colonial history demonstrates that there were elements of moral confusion in the American Revolution. Many in the American Revolution were rebelling against England for ungodly motives. So much so that they would even see the evil Old Testament character Absalom as a good guy in the story. Well, the ungodly in America today are also misunderstanding the real intent of the American Revolution, especially organizations such as People for the American Way. They love to redefine history and teach that America was founded on the principle of giving everyone moral freedom to do what they want to do. For the People for the American Way, the law of nature, nature's God, is fascism. They want freedom from religion, not freedom of religion. They believe America was founded as one nation without God rather than one nation under God. So the bottom line is, don't be deceived by the No King sloganeering and its appeal to the American Revolution. They are the French Revolution, not the American Revolution. And furthermore, recognize that the political left would actually love to have a king. They are for totalitarianism and big government. And what they're really objecting to is not presidential authority, but the policies of the president. The no king argument is what is called a red herring. They're not really objecting to government polity, but to the president's policies. Because I clearly remember back in 2012, when leftist pundits were all wishing that President Obama could be king for a day, because he was being hindered by all of these constitutional requirements. And they all cheered President Obama's executive orders. Obama signed 276 executive orders, and he set the standard for presidents using more executive orders and that constitutional authority. Trump so far has signed 210 executive orders. But notice in the Obama presidency, the Democrats did not mobilize a no king protest, because it really isn't about opposing government polity, the authority of the president. It's about opposing the policies that they do not like. And in all this, Christians should also understand biblical ethics concerning magisterial authority. Because there is a very deceptive libertarian argument out there that even fools the best of Christians. And it goes like this. We can't give a righteous president authority because an unrighteous president might come along and use that authority for evil. For example, if President Trump can bomb drug smuggling boats without due process, what's to prevent an evil president from bombing a boat full of missionaries and Bibles? But if you think about that argument for just 5 minutes, you'll realize the fallacy. It's preventing or hamstringing the role of righteous government, Romans chapter 13, by using the excuse that if you give authority to righteous government, then evil government will use that power to do evil. But that's like saying God shouldn't have authority because the devil might come along and also claim the use of authority. Or like saying that President Roosevelt should not have attacked Germany in World War II because some other president might come along and attack Switzerland because he doesn't like Switzerland's Western values. Or like saying King Josiah should not have made reforms in Israel because another king might use the same authority to promote Baal worship. So therefore, the only solution is to give nobody power, but that solution is actually favoring evil It's the path to evil. It's chaos. It's license for Sodom. Right is right and wrong is wrong. And when the righteous use authority for righteousness, it's right. And when the unrighteous use authority for evil, it's wrong. But the problem is not the authority. And when the unrighteous use authority for evil, you cross that bridge when you come to it. And you deal with it accordingly. But you don't prevent righteous magistrates from being God's avengers against those who practice evil simply because evil people might come along someday and use authority wrongly. The biblical millennial promises is a king and princes who will rule justly, using authority for good. Isaiah chapter 32. Behold, a king will reign righteously, and princes will rule justly. Each will be like a refuge from the wind and a shelter from the storm, like streams of water in a dry country, like the shade of a huge rock in a parched land. And that's what righteous governance is like. And again, the whole issue is not authority. The issue is what's right and what's wrong. Because Christians believe in righteous authority. The whole promise of the messianic reign is that the Messiah will rule the nations with a rod of iron. Revelation chapter 2, verse 27, and he shall rule them with a rod of iron, as the vessels of the potter are broken into pieces, as I have also received authority from my Father. This is speaking about the authority that God will give to his people someday. And this is the Christian emphasis, that the righteous king and righteous people must winnow the wicked and drive the threshing wheel over them, Proverbs chapter 20, verse 26, and Proverbs chapter 20, verse 8. A king who sits on the throne of justice disperses all evil with his eyes. Psalm 101, 8, King David writes, every morning I will destroy the wicked of the land. But this is exactly what ungodly, unprincipled people do not want. So of course they're going to protest. But their protest should not move us in the least because Christ is king. Now, by the way, in regard to targeting those drug boats, biblically, criminal groups do not deserve due process. I mean, when King David went after marauding gangs, terrorizing Israeli villages, he wasn't obligated under the Mosaic law to give each gang member a trial. He went there and he slaughtered them all. And we're to give the state that authority in many situations. The state has the authority to go after criminal groups without being hindered by lawyers and trials. Imagine if the United States back in 1794 had to put the Muslim Barbary pirates on trial before they could destroy them and their operations in North Africa. And this is also the concept behind martial law. There are times of civil unrest and times of increased crime where due process becomes a means by which evil men can use the virtue of the righteous against the righteous. And the righteous aren't to play that game. But getting back to this moral equivalency deception, that the righteous cannot use authority for good because the unrighteous will use it for evil, that was an argument in Edward Gibbon's famous work, The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire, written in 1789. Edward Gibbons was not a Christian. And he made the argument that once the Christians were in power, they abused that power in the same way the pagan Romans did. Once Christianity was legalized, the Christians outlawed the gladiatorial combats. They closed down the brothels. They closed the pagan temples. So see, Christians were being just as authoritarian and oppressive of the pagans as the pagans were of them. As if the standard is moral freedom and everyone can get to do what is right in his own eyes. And that depiction of church history I've found in other Christian history textbooks. That the early church, once persecuted, became the persecutor. And I actually had some seminary professors who made the same argument. And so without thinking much about it, I believed this for a long time as a historic fact. But in my own research, I discovered that the Christians did not become evil persecutors. They believed in the duty of the state to enforce the law of nature and nature's God. And by God's definition, to enforce righteousness is not the persecution and the oppression of the unrighteous, it's righteousness. Putting criminals in jail was never considered oppression or the persecution of criminals. But that's what the left believes today, because they have a moral relativistic worldview. But now even worse, a worldview where evil is good and good is evil, so that now Christian moral standards are considered evil and oppressive. That's Isaiah chapter 5. They call evil good and good evil. That's Ezekiel 22. They make no distinction between the holy and the profane. So in conclusion, 1 Timothy chapter 1, the minister of the gospel is to hold fast the faithful word, which is in accordance with the teaching, so that he will be able both to exhort in sound doctrine and refute those who contradict. For there are many rebellious men, empty talkers, and deceivers. Now, next week, I should address the government shutdown because it's ideologically joined at the hip with the No King protests. The shutdown is really for one purpose, to oppose the policies of the Trump administration, especially his cutting of government funding to leftist ideologues and leftist special interest groups, their very lifeline. The Democrats have not been able to win at the voting booth. They've not been able to win in the courts. They've not been able to win in the court of public opinion. You know, the No King protests were a bust. So their only recourse is to obstruct, to shut down the government and deny the Trump administration the funding to continue. But that's for next week. Thanks for listening. Subscribe, like, share, leave a comment below, and may Jesus Christ reign. We'll be right back.